welcome to the podcast. You're listening to The Heavy Corner, and I'm your host, Annalise. I don't really want to admit how long ago this episode was originally recorded, but I finally finished the edit, so I hope it was worth the wait. Technically, it should have been released before the previous one with James Ivani, but I like the original intro, so I've kept it in. Anyone who knows me will have certainly seen me wearing a Chaos Divine t-shirt over the years. I'm in like 5, so it's not that hard. So you can only imagine that I was super keen to sit down and have a chat with their vocalist, Dave Anderton. So I have this personal joke with myself that I should rename this podcast to Annalise Chats with Singers She Admires, because incidentally and completely unintentionally, you're the fourth guest that I've had, and you're also the fourth singer that I've spoken to. Sticking to the theme for now, I can't help but ask, how and when did you figure out that you could sing?
I can sing? I don't know. I've always just liked singing. I have a mum who can sing really well, a sister who's an opera singer, and I've always loved to make noises, much to a lot of people's disgust. I remember as a little kid, you know, in primary school, we would pretend to be a metal band, and I was always the one that ended up being the singer and screaming like I scream now, but probably a little bit higher in pitch. And so it's always been something that I've done.
Yeah.
Probably never knew it was going to be a career.
Yeah, yeah. With having a musical family, by the sounds of it, did they encourage you to do lessons or?
Not really. I did guitar lessons for a long time. So
yeah, cool.
You know, in primary school, they did one of those kind of musical ear tests. So I think it's when you're 8 or 9 years old and they play you a bunch of different notes and play chords and things, and they go, which note is higher than the other one? How many notes are in this chord? And then they pick the kids that have got reasonable ears. And I was lucky enough to get picked. So eventually, you know, convinced my mum to buy me a guitar at the age of 9 or 10.
Yeah, cool.
Had guitar lessons till I was probably 15 or 16. But I only actually went out and got singing lessons myself probably when I was maybe 25 or something like that. So
yeah, awesome.
I'd already done some Chaos albums by then.
One of the things that I always wonder about, you know, is it something you stumble upon by accident? Is it encouraged? You know, just where does that musical nature come from in incredibly talented individuals?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I just always wanted to be James Hetfield, it's funny because I don't sound anything like Hetfield, and you know, I get angry at myself that I don't sound like Hetfield. I can do Hetfield for a little bit, but I can't talk afterwards, and
yeah,
can't sing afterwards, can't scream afterwards.
I guess on that as well, like, have you done any specific training to go from clean singing to growling? Is that something that you've...
Not really.
You know, struggled with? I remember hearing like some interviews with Dave Grohl, and he's sort of been like, yep, ruined my voice totally.
Oh, he's a bastard. He's so good. Like, Dave Grohl, he's just a master. Like, I wish I could sing like him. I can do the growl and I can do the sing, but when I try and go halfway, I can do it, but I can't sing afterwards. And I hate that. I hate it so much. I'm so jealous.
So am I correct in my research that the band's been around for 17 years now?
Fuck, 17 years.
2005.
Yeah.
I had to get a calculator out.
Yeah, far out. I didn't think it would have been that long. But yeah, 2005, 2006 is when I joined the band. It's a long time.
I guess looking back now, is there anything you would have done differently over those many, many years?
Maybe stick to my guns a little bit more. I was never really happy with Avalon. Besides that, probably not much different.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could predict the future, I would have stopped us doing some things and got us to do other things, but you know, can't do that. When we recorded Avalon, like we'd done Ratio, and that, you know, was great success for us, you know, doing this first thing and getting, you know, Triple J's number one heavy record of the year for Australia and all that kind of stuff was amazing. We'd just done that and we were on tour with Slayer and Mastodon and Fear Factory, and it was just like dreams coming true.
Mm.
We thought, oh, well, we need to bring in a producer. So we brought in this guy, and he's a great guy, but he really was, you know, straight down the line, and where we kind of had a lot of prog influences and he wasn't a prog guy. So there's songs on that album which we really butchered into kind of making them the standard kind of commercial way. It's obviously it's not a commercial album, but when I listen back to like the demo versions of those songs, I much prefer them.
Is that something you'd ever think of re-recording or doing differently, I guess, now?
I'd love to.
Yeah?
I'd love to. We did a 10-year anniversary of Ratio a few years ago, and I was like, there's a couple of songs, one in particular that was kind of like the first song I ever heard and the first song I ever did vocals for before joining the band, and I really want to record it. Like, it's a terrible song, but, you know, it just to have it out there, like, it's got some really cool bits in it. It's really heavy, but yeah, I'd love to re-record some stuff. And now with, you know, having all the technology and everything at home, we probably could do it on the cheap and it still sound reasonable. So
yeah,
I'd love to do it. I just have to convince the other guys, and that'd be the hard part.
Well, 20 years is, you know, just around the corner. You've got time to plan.
Yeah. 20 years re-record. Yeah.
I think it's a great plan. It's a marketing manager. I'm just going to say, just do it.
Yeah. I think so.
And also, according to Wikipedia, it looks like you guys haven't had much of a lineup change over that period. So I guess, you know, from your perspective, you know, what's the connection or common thread that you guys have that's just seen the band go from strength to strength?
Don't kill each other. We we definitely have some big blow-ups. Like, we have some serious big blow-ups, but we're mature enough to be able to come back and, you know, oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I know where your targets are and you know where my targets are. So also, I think trying to be able to mold what you want to do around what other people want to do as well. Yeah, it's just trying to be able to get your creative juices out without your juices
trampling on, yeah,
getting on other people's juices. It's a lot of juice.
And I guess that's something that, you know, time obviously, for some people, not me, you know, musical changes will evolve and grow and possibly get better or whatnot. Is that like where the band sort of gone? Have you all sort of grown to like similar things, or do you find that, you know, some guys love totally different stuff and it's just bringing different influences, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when I started in Chaos, I was really still in mainly into thrash.
Yep.
And, you know, Simon is a Meshuggah guy. Ryan was really kind of old school prog guy, like Pink Floyd-y. And I think as time has gone on, like, you know, we all enjoy what each other enjoy now to a certain extent. Like, I've kind of become really into proggy stuff like Master Plan and Dream Theater and what have you. But, you know, thrash and grunge, like old stuff, is still really what I'm into, you know. Like, I'll listen to Meshuggah and I'll enjoy a couple of songs, but I'm not one for listening to a whole Meshuggah album. Just doesn't do it for me, probably because there's not a huge amount of like vocal melodies in there.
I'm with you on that, 100%.
Yeah.
Can't do
but,
it.
But, you know, I won't be able to get those guys to listen to a Chris Cornell album with me, even though, you know, that's what I'd like to do. But, you know, like, we find that middle ground and just listen to Opeth and Devin Townsend.
I love that that's the middle ground.
It is the middle ground, for sure.
Although you have to tell me, is it past Ghost Reveries, or did you guys give up around there as well? Or no, you guys were probably like the more proggy stuff, I guess.
Not really. Well, I can listen to the newer stuff. I miss the growls, like probably most people do. I really like the proggy stuff, but the growls give it some diversity, and I think that's what was so great about Opeth, you know, being able to just go from just this absolutely beautiful stuff to the most brutal band in the world. Yeah, I miss it. Come on, do it again.
I'm a very firm and adamant believer that it should have been a side project.
Yeah.
Discussion point of the day.
Blackwater Park was probably the hardest song that we've ever covered. And
yeah.
Man, that was such a good song, but holy crap, the lyrics are so hard to remember. It's just all over the place. It's like, what are you talking about, Mr. Ackerfeld? Like, you're over here and then, yeah.
Speaking of covers, actually, that's a really good lead into my next question. What was the inspiration behind covering Africa?
We were on tour in Sydney or Melbourne, and in the tour van driving up the coast, down the coast, one of the two, and had Toto on, and we're all singing along, and it was kind of just one of those moments where we thought we should cover this, and it was a joke, and then the joke just kept coming back, and then we thought, fuck it, let's do it. So yeah, there was no plan to think that it was going to get big, but it's kind of the most popular thing that we've done, which is annoying because you kind of want the most popular thing you've done to be something that you've written, but oh, well, we'll take it.
Okay. And if the band's resources were completely unlimited, are there any other songs that you would love to cover?
Oh, lots. Lots. We've played a lot of covers live.
Yep.
We've played a heap of covers live. We even played as a Metallica cover band a couple of times.
Yeah, cool.
Under the name The Stunning Cunts. Yeah. And it's really fun. I love doing covers. I'd probably like to do some like Master Plan or Jorn or Soundgarden. As much as I'm a big fan of thrash, there's not many thrash bands that really suit my vocals. So that's always a fun argument. Like when we're doing Metallica covers, it's always the argument. I'm always like, kind of let's do the older stuff, which is really the higher, when he's in his higher range.
Yeah.
Or the softer, newer stuff. They're like, no, let's do Black Album stuff. And it's like, doesn't work because then I just have blah, 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 blah. You know. But yeah, I love covers.
Yeah, awesome.
Scar Symmetry. I always want to do some Scar Symmetry.
Oh, my
Symmetry.
God. Fucking yes. The first two albums.
Yeah. Have you heard, is it Deviate from the Form? Deviate, I think it was a B-side on Pitch Black Progress. And, oh, it's just so catchy. So catchy. One day we'll do it.
Yeah, I'll pay to see that.
I don't go out and find much new music, but there's a band that I heard recently. They've got a terrible name. I'm going to say that publicly, but they've got a terrible name. It's almost as bad as Chaos Divine. Called Jack the Joker, and they're from South America.
Yeah, okay.
And they are wicked, wicked. You know, similar to Scar Symmetry, but
yeah, I've never heard of them.
Yeah, no, I'd never heard of them as well. But sick, check them out.
All right, I'll have to give it a listen. So let's talk lyrics. There's quite a bit of political charge that comes out in some of your songs.
Mm-hmm.
So what for you is the correlation between like heavy metal and politics? And also, why do you think it's really important to use music as a way to deliver that message?
I don't think heavy metal has to be politically charged. I don't think there has to be that connection. I think there often is, just because politics is aggravating.
Infuriating.
there's so much shit. Infuriating. And, you know, it's what's on my mind a lot of the time. And, you know, writing lyrics is how I get stuff off my chest. I've never been one to try and write lyrics that people want to hear. It's just always been about trying to get stuff off my chest, trying to fit words in that sound good with a melody. But yeah, I don't think there has to be. I mean, there's some great songs out there that have nothing to do with politics whatsoever.
Yeah.
But there's some great ones that do, you know, bands like Rage Against the Machine. I love listening to some aggressive, like Rage Against the Machines and stuff like that, you know. When you're passionate about the lyrics, it just takes music to another level.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I was just about to ask. Is it something that you sort of intended to do from the beginning, or did it just come out naturally on its own?
When I started with Chaos, I was just finishing, I was in the middle of doing a mass comm kind of journalism degree.
Yeah, cool.
And doing some of that kind of work, like I just, you know, had my eyes open to what was kind of happening in the mass media, and just watched Outfoxed and that kind of thing. And I was really on the I hate George Bush kind of trail. And and so it wasn't intentional, but I think once I'd written one song about it, it became something that was easy to, not easy, but felt natural. Ratio, Ratio was not so much politics, like that was more personal stuff. But as we went along, it was kind of, I just go in ebbs and flows of personal politics, environmental stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I get a lot of personal when I listen to Human Connection. I keep going back to that album. It's like, I love some of the other stuff too, but I just keep going back to that one every time because it's got that.
Yeah.
It's very raw.
I mean, that was, yeah. Well, my dad died just in the beginning of writing that album. So It's a very personal album, but it's probably Legacies was, you know, everyone says, "Oh, my latest stuff is the best stuff." But Legacies has either surpassed it or it's the album that's come closest to Human Connection for me.
Now you're telling me that, thinking about it, you know, that emotion, it very much comes through. Like you can tell, yeah. I mean, just for me, like you can just hear it in the melody, like in the delivery.
Yeah.
Without even really knowing, you know, what the backstory is, you know, the reasoning for the lyrics or anything like that. So yeah,
yeah.
Total kudos, I guess.
Thank you.
And it's a weird thing to say, but given the circumstances, you know, sorry you went through something really fucking tragic to deliver something that was really bloody incredible.
Yeah.
But
tragedy makes the best music.
Yeah.
And that's a sad thing. Like all the music I love is tragic. There's not many happy songs that I really enjoy.
Neither.
It's like, you know, growing up on like Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, that stuff,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
Makes the hairs stand up.
Absolutely. And I guess that's what I was going to ask before as well, just about your degree and writing and communications and all of that. So, you know, do you only use music as a way to deliver that message or do you write? Like, I don't even know what you do for a living, I guess, you know. Does that pop into other personal parts of your life?
Yeah, definitely. So I've done a bit of everything.
Haven't we all?
I started studying aquaculture was the first thing I started studying. And that didn't last very long. I did one semester. It's basically like I loved doing the science kind of things, but there was like agribusiness units where you like drawing diagrams of wheat goes in, cow, money comes out and poo. And so from that,
fair enough.
I went, yeah, I did well enough to change into whatever I wanted and did mass comm, completed that, started working in news and a little bit of private production stuff as well, doing videos for big corporates. And I decided I hated that and wanted to do something that was more valuable. So I went back to uni and did a renewable energy engineering degree.
Yeah, interesting.
And now I'm a renewable energy engineer. Just got a promotion a couple of weeks ago, so now I'm a principal engineer, which sounds really fancy.
Nice, congrats. Does.
Yeah. Much to, you know, I've got lots of colleagues that are older and wiser than me, so it's a bit embarrassing walking in as this principal engineer when they probably know more than me, or definitely know more than me. But yeah, I mean, that kind of journalism stuff sticks with you, and I think it's a bit of a saying, but I think uni is more about learning to learn and learning to keep your eyes open more so than the particular stuff that you're actually studying. And yeah, I mean, like you listen to a lot of our stuff and it's, you know, environmental stuff, there's songs about Israel-Palestine conflicts and stuff. I try and keep stuff general as much as I can so
yep.
People can listen to it and not be excluded and they can, you know, paint their picture. But yeah, I mean, environmental stuff is something that I'm really passionate about. Animal rights is something I'm really passionate about. Human rights is something I'm really passionate about. And so that's a common thread.
I always love asking these questions. I feel like this podcast is just for me personally, just to find out, you know,
yeah,
the meaning behind.
I mean, I've seen some some vocalists and lyricists like do when they release an album, they go, you know, this song, and they talk through the meaning behind it. And I've thought about doing it, but I just don't want to ruin it for people. I think the mystery is half the joy. Like the songs that you listen to as a kid, and I'm sure if I got to meet like some of these people and go, what were you writing about? And it'd be something completely different than what I was thinking, and I'd be like, this song sucks now. I thought you were doing something really awesome, but you were talking about, you know,
yeah,
what food you fed your cat that night, like, you know.
Yeah, having that opportunity to sort of create your own meaning out of these songs, you know, as a fan, you know, going back and listening to it and putting your own personal connections or emotions to things that may or may not have anything to do with what they're about.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
That is what music is essentially, isn't it?
Like the interesting one is that probably the first song that we wrote for this, you know, this is a general thing that whenever I try and write a song, I often you know, try and put myself in the perspective of the character that I'm writing about, or what have you. I wrote the song False Flags. That was probably one of the first ones. And, you know, it's about doomsday preppers. And when you read the lyrics now, like, I reckon, well, there's people that have been like, how'd you know about the pandemic before this was, like, going to happen? Because there's, like, stuff about vaccines and stuff in there. And this this was written, like, oh, I don't know, probably 6-12 months before the pandemic actually started or existed, you know? So, yeah, people put their own...
Where's that crystal ball?
Yeah, where's that crystal ball, you know?
So, generally speaking, as a Sydney sider myself who's never been to Perth, mm-hmm. I guess, what's the scene like over there? It seems to be incredible bands that just come out of Perth.
There are some amazing bands that have come out of Perth and continue to come out of Perth. I guess the scene, I hate to say it, isn't as good as it used to be, or maybe I'm just becoming an old grumpy man. I mean, we used to do shows.
Probably a bit of both.
Yeah, a bit of both. Like Chaos with Voyager and bands like Pyromesh that don't exist anymore. And we'd play the Amplifier Bar and you'd get like 500 punters through the door and, you know, you could crowd surf through that place.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, you're lucky in Perth for a local show if you get, you know, 250 people there kind of thing. Unfortunately, the cover show thing, I think, has taken a lot away from local music over the last couple of years.
Mm.
Presume it's the same in Sydney, but over here, there's just constant cover bands. Like, there's just a craze of cover bands playing, like, every weekend. There's, you know, there'll be a Soundgarden show and a Red Hot Chili Peppers show. And, like, it's cool, but it's definitely taking away from the local gigs, which is really shit.
It's interesting. I mean, we get that a bit here in Sydney. I think it's a bit more mainstream, though. Like, you know, you go to the RSL and you'd watch a cover band or something like that. I think the bigger problem here is just the lack of venues that will support heavy metal shows, really.
Well, that's the thing. Like, because there's these cover shows and we only have so many venues, and they know if they put on a Pearl Jam cover show that they're going to get, you know, 600 people through the door. And if they put on a local metal gig, they're lucky if they get 200. Like, it's business. It sucks, but it's business.
Yeah, I think that's, again, so the problem with Sydney venues is they're too big or they're too small.
Mm.
You know, you can't put on a decent metal show these days at, say, the Metro or something like that and expect, you know, 600 plus people to rock up. It probably feels way more than that, but you know what I mean? Like, the sort of smaller venues are really just reduced to Factory Floor and the Stag. Like, the Gaelic's gone. There used to be, like, the Empire up in Annandale. Fuck, the Annandale Hotel's gone. Like, all of these sort of smaller venues that used to support a lot of the local, not always metal gigs, but, you know, there were a lot of metal gigs. They're just all gone. You know, even, like, the Mandarin Club, and there was all sorts of weird venues in the city when I was sort of 18 that were just, like, downstairs and underground, and I don't think this is a bar and I don't know where I am, but you know what?
We played the Mandarin Club.
Yeah.
We played the Mandarin Club.
Yeah, nice.
That was where we played our first show in Sydney. We're like, what the fuck is this? The Mandarin Club, like, going through, like, this weird seedy casino-y thing.
Yep, that's the one. Yeah. Downstairs. Yep.
That's the one. Yeah, the Mandarin Club.
Yeah, we just don't really really have that anymore, you know.
I think, well, I hope it's just another one of those cycles. Like, there's been, you know, less venues, more venues, less venues, more venues. And with any luck, we're just on a on a downside at the moment, and it comes back.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Live music's never going to die.
No.
So.
No, not at all.
It's never going to die. You know, people are always going to want to listen to real live music, not just people pressing a play button.
Yeah. And I guess as well, like, do you think it's a case of, you know, people have just relocated for work or relocated for other reasons out of Perth, or could be anything?
Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, probably, you know, when you're starting out in a band, you get your friends and your friends' friends and... That probably makes a big difference. I think it's just a general thing that there's so many people going to cover shows. People aren't discovering that new music that they would. So, you know, everyone gets old. Everyone has families and that kind of thing. And, you know, when you were 20 and you could go to a gig, you know, three times a week, you can't do that anymore. So you need, as a band and as a music community, you need new people to keep coming through and discovering. And if they're not going to gigs, how do they discover new local bands? I mean, streaming platforms like Spotify and stuff are probably helping now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really hate streaming platforms. So I don't want to give them too much credit, but they probably are one of the few good things that's happened recently. Like AndrewHogue.com is really good place to discover new music. Like he plays old stuff, new stuff, lots of local stuff. I don't really listen to Triple J anymore. It's just...
Don't blame you.
Yeah, it's just shit. It's just shit.
Yeah. Do you guys ever feel really isolated over there in Perth? Like, has it ever been a barrier for touring or...?
All the time.
Yeah.
Every day I feel isolated in Perth. Not because of the pandemic.
I guess even prior to all this COVID stuff, though.
Yeah, but prior. I mean, for us to tour, you know, we don't make money touring. We lose money. We put in our own, you know, we work hard. We put in our own money and we'd be lucky if we broke even.
Yeah.
You know, it's just expensive to fly five dudes plus sometimes, you know, a couple of crew plus all the gear. It's really, really expensive. Being on the East Coast, you have that ability to drive, you know, half a day and be somewhere else. We don't have that here. For us, we did the trip from Perth to Sydney, Ryan and myself, and we did it in 3 days, and that was like driving 24/7 kind of thing.
Oh, God, yeah. Sounds yeah, terrible.
You can't, it's not sustainable.
No.
And then, you know, when we go, we've toured Europe a couple of times, and, you know, just to have that town that's 45 minutes away would just be a dream. Being able to play night after night after night after night, just, you know, a half hour, 45 minute drive away, that would be amazing.
Living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream. And, you know, maybe that's why Perth bands, the bands that have come out of Perth are really good in general, just because they have to spend so much time working on music as opposed to just playing gigs.
Yeah, speaking of international touring and being over in Europe, what's something you've noticed about the difference between Aussie crowds and Aussie venues versus, you know, what you sort of see over there in Europe? Or I don't know if you guys have toured any other continents.
No, we were just Europe and the UK.
Yeah.
We were hoping to go to America with Legacies.
Yep.
But obviously pandemic kind of shat on that idea. What's different? In Australia, it's different. Like different cities in Australia are different.
Yeah.
Perth and Adelaide and Sydney are kind of the same. Melbourne's always a little bit different. I think there's so many musicians in Melbourne, you get a lot of this, I think I could do better. But to be fair, there's a lot of great musicians in Melbourne, so probably a bit rowdier in Australia. I remember playing our first Prog Power in the Netherlands, and before going on stage, the promoter that got us over there was like, just don't swear on stage. And you know, halfway through the show, I was just, fuck. And then I just remember, like, after the show, some Australians that had come over to watch us play was like, your face when you said fuck. It's a, you know, a second show out of Australia. The promoter's like, you know, someone who's got some serious industry weight, and he's told me not to swear, and I've just, like, one of the first things that's come out of my mouth is fuck. You know, we played a town in Belgium the night before. It was kind of like a rip off Hard Rock Cafe, tiny room, but absolutely jam packed. Like, there was upstairs and the hallway stairwell was like full of people trying to get into the room. Must have been a breach of every kind of fire safety legislation that there is. But that was insane. Like, just a insane, fun show, and probably still one of my favorite shows ever. But then playing the next night in the Netherlands and kind of that same Melbourne-itis. So I think probably not so much countries are different, but I think cities are different.
I guess on that as well, do you have any bucket list festivals or venues anywhere in the world that you would love to play?
When I was a kid, I always thought, you know, one day I'll play at the Sydney Olympic Stadium. Yeah, I always wanted to play there, but I've always thought it'd be great to play Varken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we were lucky enough to do Big Day Out twice, and we got to do Soundwave, but Varken is where it would be awesome.
And I have one very final, quite random question. I did some reading of online articles in preparation for having a chat with you tonight. And I did stumble upon one about your top five favorite albums. And I have to ask, did you ever come around to appreciating Load or Reload by Metallica?
I've come to appreciate Load. I can, you know, there's some good songs on Load. Reload is still shit. I think they could have made a really good album by just releasing one album instead of doing the double.
Yep.
And I don't know. I still think they should have like done it as a side project or something. You know, like the Lou Reed thing. No one really considers that Metallica, and they could have done the same thing.
Very true.
Like I totally get that they wanted to do something different. You know, reading or watching interviews more recently where they're kind of opened up a bit more. You know, back then they were always like, you know, we just want to keep doing something different and don't want to, you know, get stuck in a rut. But then when you go listen to interviews now, they're like, we thought we had to keep going down the commercial path to stay relevant and blah blah blah. But yeah, I think there was some really shit songs, but there were some really good songs as well. The thing is, like songs like Mama Said, like I love that song. I think that song is beautiful. But you know, songs, oh, there's just some really shit songs like Memory Remains. Like, oh, why would you do that?
It's guilty pleasure of mine.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's fine. You're allowed to enjoy it. But I.
Oh, trust me. I gave up a long time ago on caring about the shit that I listen to.
Good. You should. You know, don't let people tell you what's good.
No, I did that for too many years.
But I think it's shit.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat tonight. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's been fun.
Thank you very much for having me.
See ya.
We'll see you. Hopefully see you in Sydney.
Yes, that would be nice.
We really wanted to tour Legacies. You know, it's tens of thousands of dollars of our own money kind of gone into that plus, you know, 3 or 4 years of our lives. And, you know, not to be able to take it on the road really sucked. Definitely be over there as soon as we can.
I'll hold you to that.
Please do. Please do.
Thanks again.
Thanks. See you later.
If you enjoyed listening to this or any episode in the past, there's a few really easy ways that you can support the show for free. You can follow or subscribe the show on whatever podcast platform you use, and you can also rate or review the episode too. You can follow me online at The Heavy Corner on Facebook, Instagram, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and also on YouTube. I now have a free tier on Patreon, so come over and give me a follow. I've just shared a new post with a photo of something I own that's pretty rare, and I'd love to see what cool music memorabilia you guys have in your collection as well. It is pretty expensive to run a podcast, and I know the cost of living is pretty fucked at the moment, but if you can or you did want to support the show, I do have 2 paid tiers which go directly to supporting the running costs, including software and hosting. These paid tiers will also give you access to submit questions for upcoming guests, so head over to patreon.com/theheavycorner. Last but not least, a special thank you to everyone who's already following the show, to my guests who have been gracious and willing to give me an hour or so of their time to have a chat, and also to Dan for writing the intro music. He's in a new band from Sydney called Small Gods, and you can check out their first single on Spotify. I'll post a link in the show notes. Finally, another quick shout out to Pete Gardner Photography over in Perth, who took some incredible shots of Chaos Divine at their last show, and that's also the photo of Dave that I'm using for this episode. So you can find him on Instagram at Pete Gardner Photography. Thanks again. That's it for now. See ya.